Hallo, liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer einer weiteren Folge der Interviews for Future, heute direkt aus dem Berliner Hauptbahnhof, und zwar in English. So I introduce in English for the second time. Hello, listeners from our podcast Interviews for Future. Greetings from the Berlin Hauptbahnhof train station. I'm sitting here with Dr. Ye Tao.
Hello, Dominique.
Hello, Ye.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you here. We tried to find a cafe, but it wasn't possible. And the first thing, why we are sitting here, or better, who are you? What's your mission? What's your background?
So I'm a scientist engineer, and my mission is to help alleviate the suffering caused by climate change, and hopefully also to help communities thrive, even when climate change is upon us. And it's possible that the project I'm working on might have the ability or potential to partially and perhaps totally reverse some of the worst impacts of climate change. So I'm in Berlin because I've been on a European speaking tour after presenting at COP26, and that's here that I met Dominique.
Yeah, so you was officially invited to COP26, and you could show there what you are planning.
Yes, I was invited to present at a press conference at COP26 to very briefly present some of the central ideas why we really need to think beyond conventional greenhouse gas mitigation if we were to have a chance to, as we say, deal with the climate monster.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. We will come to that later, that the CO2 or the greenhouse gases at all, we have this long time it needs to have an effect if you suck them out or bring them in, no? And there we have a really problem. So you have constructed an idea, and it's called MEER, MEER, like you tell, Mirrors for Earth Energy Rebalancing.
Yes, so the framework is called the MEER framework, and MEER refers, as you say, Mirrors for Earth Energy Rebalancing. And the idea really stemmed from a top-down and zoomed-out analysis of the whole problem. And after it's developed, we have started to look at how in practice it could be really implemented. And it turns out that we think first and foremost, MEER will be very useful as an adaptation measure to help communities that's already suffering from heat stress and the drought pressures, and where agriculture is becoming difficult. We envision deploying MEER arrays in these regions to help deal with extreme heat, and also to keep water moisture in the ground for longer, so that communities that depend on primary production agriculture can persist longer, and also potentially create livable local habitats as the problem gets worse year to year.
So the ground idea is putting mirrors on the globe. They are reflecting the sunlight. The sunlight is a carrier of the warmth, of the energy. And if it comes, we know this from the ice and the ocean. If it comes on the ocean, it goes into the energy, goes into the ocean, into the mass. And on the land, it's the same. And then we heat up. And the reflection is the upheating. And if you have ice, it's mirrored back in space. And this is the ground idea of your plan.
Yes, the central idea is that the problem that's really causing ecosystem damage and damage to our human systems, both in infrastructure and in agriculture, is an excess of heat. An excess of thermal energy drive more severe hurricanes, for example, and much worse storms. And they also cause extreme temperatures that really wipe out large areas, ecosystems, forests, and crop fields. So the most direct parameter we should be worried about is heat. And greenhouse gases are important in this problem because they are a knob, one of the many knobs that can tune the amount of heat that's on the Earth's surface at any given time. And the heat circulates through the Earth as sunlight coming in as shortwave radiation. It gets absorbed by the surface, especially dark surfaces such as the boreal forests and the ocean, and then it transforms into heat. And the heat then can escape by a long wave radiation back into space. So the greenhouse gases are basically preventing the long wave radiations from escaping. And if we look at the energy imbalance, essentially how much more energy is coming in and then it's going out, we get a number that's between 400 and 1,000 terawatts. So in comparison, human civilization uses currently 18 terawatts. So, and that's expressed in terms of fossil fuel energy. So if we were to go brute force against this problem, for example, using some sort of air conditioner to cool the Earth and to try to move heat out of the ecosystem into space, we need something that's 5,000% efficient at least in order to be worth even worth considering. And after looking at essentially most, if not all, of the paradigms or proposals in the climate space, including direct air capture and planting trees as prominent examples, we find that these proposals will not be able to satisfy the very basic physical energetic constraint of the problem. And it turns out that if we make glass mirrors, which turns out to be very low in energy content, and they're very durable in the environment, if we put them out there and let them reflect a part of the shortwave radiation, so part of the sunlight is prevented from converting into heat in the first place, then we can bypass the greenhouse end of the problem, and thereby both locally and globally have a chance to return Earth climate to a average state which resembles what we had before the start of burning fossil fuels. So the reason why mirrors, especially glass mirrors, are so efficient is because once you make them, for once they sit out in the fields for decades, potentially for centuries, with proper engineering, and they essentially accumulate benefits over time. And this increasing heat rejection efficiency, which what we call energy rejected per energy invested, you have the same metric in energy production as well, is what really makes the mirrors especially suitable for tackling this overheating problem we have.
Yeah, I think for everyone it's really easy to understand. A mirror is reflecting the visual light, so we are very close. We know this if we take a little mirror in the sun and follow the dot. So your point is in the whole thing of climate change to use this for shortly, I would say, winning time, so that we don't have to run beyond the greenhouse gas, like sucking them out of the energy of the atmosphere. What's impossible, but what's possible maybe, but and important, but we don't have so much time, and you try to stretch the time we need.
Yes, time is a very important parameter in dealing with climate change, because right now we have very rapid warming, and we're projected to basically surpass 1.5 and 2 degrees within the next 2 decades, and that's pretty much independent of what we do on the emission side. So if we do an analysis of the rate of carbon capture that's feasible by a combination of all the strategies that's out there, we can probably arrive, when we gear all of our energy to such endeavors, we can probably capture on the order of 1 gigaton carbon per year. And that's pales in comparison with the 10 gigaton per carbon that we're currently emitting as a civilization. So carbon capture technologies are so inefficient from energy, material, and speed point of view that engaging our resource in them essentially is a sort of a planetary suicide. So what we need to do is really to move beyond conventional mitigation and look at how we can both stabilize temperature and at the same time have a strategy that catalyzes very fast moving away from conventional fossil fuels toward renewables. And it's in this context that I think the MIR framework really is unique. So mirrors, as we mentioned, as Dominique mentioned, are nothing but tools that can channel sunlight. Kids with a mirror will play with them under a very sunny day. So they are essentially like your copper wires that channels electrical energy. So if you have the mirrors to manipulate the incoming sunlight, which is, by the way, the ultimate form or source of renewable energies, then we can obviously leverage them to enhance a range of renewable energy technologies that are either existing or are in development, some of which are taking place within our framework. So we envision that if we ramped up the glass manufacturing industry and the mirror infrastructure to provide this local habitat preservation, we would automatically also move towards the capability to enhance MIR-enabled renewable energy ways of production that makes conventional photovoltaics, for example, much more efficient. And there are many schemes to do that. And your imagination is the limit. So I think this sort of a snowballing effect, where we at the same time buy time by lowering temperature and catalyze a renewable transition, is what's needed to really deal with this wicked problem that's climate change, which if we were to do nothing, we have on the order of 1 to 2 decades of something that resembles current civilization.
And so on the other side, how fine you can manipulate the temperature with the mirrors, because it's in the end it's a kind of how it is called. You grab into the system, into the really really system. So it's a deep grab into. I would say a negative example would be using chemicals to wash out the CO2. So it's a kind of gear engineering or close to this, but. On this side, you have the fast reaction from the sunlight, from the heat. On the other side, it's the same that you have the fast reaction possibility for humanity if we see, okay, it's too much or too less of mirroring at this moment for the next, let's say, 3 years. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you hit a very important point, which is on the one hand, how stable these structures are and how tunable they are, and whether we can change the implementation pattern and also where they are instantly. So as one example, the current most simple design we have is nothing but a square piece of glass mirror on top of a glass rod. And this device can be very freely rotated, even just by one person, say 180 degrees. And because for many locations in, let's say, the northern hemisphere, the mirrors are inclined by, say, 20, 30 degrees towards the sun. If you just turn them 180 degrees, you essentially face the mirror away from the sun, and thereby essentially shutting out their global cooling impact. So the device is very easy to tune in the field, even in their most rudimentary of implementations.
You talked a few times from regions about regions. So if imagining maybe we have a field of mirrors in a region. Let's say we are here in Berlin, around of Berlin. So we have a heat wave in Berlin. How regional is this effect of the mirrors around Berlin? Is it an effect that goes through complete Europe, or is it an effect very close only to Berlin? How precise?
Yeah, that's a very good question. But before addressing that, I would like to return to one point that I think I missed before, which is the speed at which these technologies work. So we have a preliminary data coming from 2021 that demonstrates that cooling is essentially instantaneous. So we measured the impact of a small mirror array on soil temperature, and we noticed that essentially during the same day, with maybe a lag of a few tens of minutes, you can register very pronounced the cooling of soil at, say, 10 centimeter depth, up to about 5 degrees Celsius. And that's very substantial, and in most heat wave cases would essentially prevent damage to the root system of plants. We are in the process of also doing a much larger scale experiment this coming summer that not only look at soil temperature impacts, but also air temperature impact. So air temperature impact becomes interesting because air moves around very quickly, and you can imagine that with a very small field, you might not be able to measure much of a difference. But as you make the field very large, say, 1 hectare, so say size of football field, then you might start to measure some sort of very pronounced air temperature impact. So the data for MIR framework for this question is still to be collected. However, there are data in the field of urban heat island mitigation that suggests that, say, you have a roughly 0.1 increase in albedo, basically if the neighborhood roads or roofs were painted white such that you reflect, say, 10% more of the sunlight, then the neighborhood can register temperature changes or basically temperature cooling between anywhere between 1 to 8 degrees Celsius. So these are values that have been observed by colleagues working in the urban environment settings. So And they also noticed that the what's called the correlation length of this temperature is actually how big do you have to have your neighborhood painted white or perturbed to be more reflective to have the temperature measurable. It's on the order of a few hundred meters. So we suspect that even, you know, for your backyard, if you really increase the albedo sufficiently, you will be able to experience very marked local cooling. We believe that especially in the agricultural setting, it's one adaptation strategy that would really be able to modulate and create local microclimates, even within regions such as in Spain, where many vineyards, as I heard, are starting to suffer from overheat and drought. And actually, we have been contacted by many such farmers who are interested in potentially collaborating with us to test out similar technologies.
Okay, so let's come from a very small scale to connect with a big scale. For me, for sure, it makes from the idea sense to say, okay, I have maybe this neighborhood and I don't need a person who looks on the temperature and does a mirror like this or that, but you have an automatic system. The temperature scaled like not over 32 degrees there in this neighborhood, the mirror will do this automatically. That's the process. If I connect this in my mind with a worldwide web, with a worldwide connection and measuring and so on, so that it's a bit possible to to put the cooling spots so precisely and over the globe connected that you can stop a wave maybe that comes from the ocean. A heat wave comes from the ocean, will come to fields, and it comes from with wind, that you can bring there much more coolness, that it, you know what I mean?
I think you have
a too much science fiction.
that's what I was gonna say. It's a very impressive imagination that you have, Dominique. So I think let's start from the small scale. Certainly, like application within urban environments, especially say somewhere in the wealthy Middle Eastern countries, then it makes sense to have really controllable and mirror arrays that can be modulated on demand according to local temperature and energy needs. Because essentially, when you want to do that, you either have to motorize them, but put them onto rotation axes, or to have them controllable based on some sort of electrochromic or mechanical switches. So those systems consume some energy and they're more prone to failure. But in the context of high-end urban applications, that might be justified, because otherwise people would be putting in traditional air conditionings, which actually exacerbates the heating problem, because you have to, in the net process, dissipate the electricity. So in the long term and sometimes in short run, you make problems worse overall or at another location. So about scaling up to the global level in order to have a beneficiary climate impact, I think it would be very difficult in terms of infrastructure to have the global average temperature cooling infrastructure be tunable on demand at the click of a switch or command. However, if your goal is to, say, protect certain cities or populated regions from the worst impacts of hurricanes or wildfires, it's possible to really have a high concentration of these static passive mirrors in the vicinity, such that any heat transport, either through the air or through the water, can have the time to dissipate into space as the fluid flows towards your urban centers. So it's certainly possible, and these things are projects that need to be really tested. For example, floating mirror arrays in off the coast of Florida perhaps could at least attenuate some of the energy that's feeding into hurricanes. It's something that needs to be tested.
Okay, but at the moment, a kind of science fiction.
Yes, at the moment, because I think more urgent needs are really to safeguard agriculture and to keep people comfortable and not, suffer from extreme heat waves where wet bulb temperature goes up about 40 degrees.
There comes a bit, if I first heard about this, I've seen, okay, mirrors, And the automatic idea, maybe not sensible, but imaginatory, it comes is why not combining it with solar modules so that you reflect only a part of the energy and the other part you can use directly, you can use so that you have the double effect and less CO2 and other gases because you take the energy from there and you have the reflection, or is it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And actually we think a lot about these questions. So my background is in nano fabrication, mechanical engineering, and we essentially come from the energy field. So energy production is basically at the center of our thinking. Except that right now I have to emphasize that energy production problem and the climate problem have become two separate problems because of our inaction over the past 3 decades. That's manifested by the fact that the heat imbalance that's causing global warming is 50 times larger than the total energy consumption of the world in terms of fossil fuel energy. In terms of electrical energy, it's like 500 times. So it's not the same problem anymore. But of course, in order to incentivize the adoption of this paradigm for fixing the ecosystem, we can leverage the need to produce energy. And what you mentioned, like using different frequency selective filters to in order to selectively reject, say, near-infrared parts above 1100 nanometer would be useful to provide some local temperature alleviation, especially in regions that are hot. In regions like Germany, I don't think that currently makes too much sense because the extra local heating might provide some minor local benefit, though I think it's a amount of energy that's rather small and not really measurable on a local scale. However, the problem also is the cost for implementing this extra reflective layer and to make the wavelength selective. So many factors need to be balanced and discussed on a case-by-case basis, location by location basis to make the right decision. But of course, thinking along these lines are very interesting, and there's a lot of engineering opportunities, and if there's German colleagues working in energy science with the funding who want to work with us, we welcome all collaborations. In the end, we need all hands on deck to solve this problem.
So I see you are not focused on bringing exactly your idea on the plan and on the reality. That's an idea of an open how to bring it here and there with individual tunings, and the ground idea for sure is the reflection. But it's not to say, hey, stop, it's only the reflection. If there's a positive effect with other things, why not?
So. Yes. The problem is so big that we have to leverage all collaborative and complementary techniques, and we have to work with everybody. So everybody, even competitors, we regard them as colleagues who can produce, who can encourage us to think and better and to... you know, there's always things that we miss in developing a new scheme, a new framework.
Yeah, in the end, science, open for.
Yes.
How it is, another point of bringing those things to reality. If we all would follow the science, we don't have these problems today, but we don't do. Then we have the problem how to show the people if it's easy or not, if it's useful or not. Is this an idea that easily could work? Maybe you have a city of 400,000 citizens, or maybe less, and to build it only one of these kinds there, and to show it's in this area working. Maybe in a heatwave area where you see, okay, the heatwave around in the bigger environment is high, but there it's a few temperatures lower, a few degrees lower, to bring out a not to start with the complete world because the money, and you know how it is, like to start with an example. Is this a sensible way?
Yeah, a demonstration experiment on that scale would be wonderful.
Okay.
I suspect that initially we would not be very likely to secure enough funding to really revamp a whole city of 300,000 people. Probably for, are lucky and to attract some funding, maybe a village of 3,000, that's a completely feasible and wouldn't really cost that much money to really revamp the village.
Okay, So let's take a village from 3,000. You have a good area around, maybe a few hills around so that the wind is not so much effect. and so on. If there comes a village and say, hey, let's go, what kind of amount of money is needed? What is the part of the village has to think about?
Okay, that's a very good question. So we'll give the example of a ongoing project we're trying to implement. So there is a one of our team members who owns a apartment building in California, very close to San Francisco. And it gets really hot in the summers, and it's getting hotter and hotter, and it's becoming almost impossible to live on the top floor because of heating of the roof. So currently we're trying to cover this roof with a mirror array, basically make into a mirrored roof. And we'll basically have data this summer to test how much passive cooling you can achieve. But to just give a price to cover the roof, it's on the order of $2,000 of mirror worth of mirrors to cover a roof for an apartment.
So one apartment roof. So
yeah,
it's so a normal like a normal house for people house.
Yeah, it's on that order.
Yeah.
And currently this is still somewhat expensive in our mind because we think
$2,000 is not expensive. Sure it's money, but think about you put in your SUV.
Yes, perhaps maybe
10 times
for
20 times.
Yes, yes. For people who are used to consuming luxury goods, yes. But we are developing the project with in mind citizens living in other regions that's economically disadvantaged. So we always try to, in the end, we need to bring down the cost even more towards essentially what the energy costs needed in the manufacturing and infrastructure building process. And if we use that eventual goal as a metric, which would be achieved if there's a global coordinated effort to implement this as a UN project, then the price can come down by a factor of 10 to less than $200, which would be very much affordable by communities living, say, in India, many of which are suffering already immensely from the heat wave, which are usually before the monsoon season, from March to May, roughly.
Yeah. So where is the project now? So you're at the moment, you have to have a plan. It's very well thought. So you have the physics, you have the possibilities, you have this and that. Where it's standing. So what's your main topic at the moment? What's the next step to do?
So the main focus for this coming year is to obtain at least two high-quality data sets to interrogate the impact of mirror arrays on soil, air, and temperature, and soil moisture as a function of the fractional coverage by mirrors. So the other important question is to look at how floating mirror arrays impact water temperature. There are some very important niche applications, including to safeguard coral reefs, the bleaching of which is driven predominantly by ocean heat wave events and also excess sunlight during these heat wave events. So getting actual data in these two land and the aquatic ecosystems are what we're looking to implement. And there is a very easy application for floating mirror arrays in the urban setting, which is to prevent water evaporation from reservoirs, both for drinking purposes and also for pumped hydro. And this way you can provide both local cooling, in the end global cooling benefit, but also local energy saving and water saving benefits.
Yeah, and what you say, it's saving room to live in.
That's right.
It's the rooftop in the end. You have the effect in solar fields that it's very good for environment. You have the plants, you have the insects, because you have the real hot sun on the spots where it's not the solar panel, and you have these shadow spaces like trees gave before.
Mm-hmm.
Is this kind of similar to you? So how big is, if you have an area of mirrors, how big is one mirror? Where you are on this?
So the size of mirror depends on your particular application. So if the field is essentially just for global cooling purposes in combination with agriculture, they are about 60 by 60 centimeter per mirror in the current model. And we put them up between half to 1 meter high. And at this height, they give a very good uniform cooling of the ground underneath. And you can space them out in one dimension, by like 2 to 3 meters, and the shadow extends into those regions, and overall you have very, you know, more or less very uniform cooling. And 2 to 3 meter spacing is sufficient for both human operators or farmers, and also some small scale machine instruments in the farming.
So a kind of perfect combination would be, you have a field of maybe apple trees, you have a field directly on the side of this field where you have the bees, and where you have the bees you have the mirrors. So you have the cooling down of the area where the apple trees are included.
Yes, yes.
Maybe it's a circle around, and in the middle you have the this field for the...
Yeah, there's many design opportunities. And if you look at industrial agriculture, of orchards and avocados and almonds, there's a lot of wasted space that's essentially open dirt. Those locations, if you put in mirrors, not only would save water for the whole orchard, you would also promote the growth of the ecosystem, like grass at least, and provide much better habitat for insects and the pollinators, that's for sure. So coming back to the question of solar PV, there is a great fascination and with energy production with most people that we talk to, and that's for the right reason. They need to be ramped up. I think mirrors can really help PV in providing, you know, in large scale cooler air into which to cool, because the efficiency of PV decreases when temperature of the panel increases, especially during the heat of the day. So if a cold implementation with the mirrors can help cool the air temperature, that could provide a cooling opportunity for the PV. Which
so the
would
effective of the PV is higher if it's
exactly
yes. if so it's cold around. So.
Yes, so it would be a technology that's complementary to photovoltaics. So the combination of agrovoltaics and mirror enabled sustainable agriculture could yield benefits for all three areas concerned.
So like my chessboard, you have the black is the mirrors, or the white is the mirrors, the black is the PV.
That's right.
And you have a good space between. From what money should this could be, what's your goal? Is it good making private companies to bring out this, making more governments, or is it the whole scale in the end that you are looking for interesting helpers, I would say, maybe on this
So
front.
In developing the initial technologies, getting all the data and the technical specification in place, we are constrained to leverage the current economics system, funding systems. However, the current economic system is at the root of the problem of climate change. And I highly doubt that the system would be able to really address the problem if let to operate based on its profit-driven motivations and forces. So in the end, it has to be a coordinated government effort. Hopefully some sort of United Nations organization with real executive power, where there could also be adaptation, you know, adoption by different individual governments that really have this need for their population. So I think that's a very major advantage of the mirror framework compared to many other geoengineering protocols, in that because you need land in order to implement this, every country with sovereign territory need to be consulted and need to partake in the endeavor in order for it to work, and everybody can make their own decision. So in the end, it's automatically a cooperative, automatically globally democratic process by design. So that bypasses the lengthy political negotiations that, as we have witnessed over the past 26 years of COP, has yielded absolutely zero impact on the trajectory of the climate.
So from my side, it's a very interesting idea. And for sure, it has maybe a few things to solve here and there, but it sounds like in the general very working. I would come to climate change in general for a few questions before. Do we have something you say it's important to say about this, or maybe if there's some unsolved problem you are working on or like this?
I think the major problem is that there is a very strong level of censorship in the mainstream media about both the severity of the climate crisis and the implication for human life and for human civilization. I think we're brainwashed into thinking that somehow Homo sapiens were special, that we are here to last, to make great things, that we have hundreds to millions of years ahead of us.
Yeah, in a way, we think that we are made of God, too, and the Earth is our present. So
yeah, I think that that's a problem. And yeah. I think the discussion should gradually move towards perhaps, you know, we are just as, you know, naive as insects, as bacteria in a petri dish. And we will just utilize all the resource that's put at our disposal, and we will just collapse like any other organism or ecosystems. And if one realizes or takes on this perspective, then at least people would be encouraged to think about meaning of life from very different angles and to take different frames of reference. So I think that's the maybe the last thing I want to leave to the audience to think about.
Okay, yeah, thanks. One thing I want to ask, because I asked this this year in every natural science interview, only to give the people outside a scale of view on it, there's often in the discussion is this 1.5 degree goal. I would say anything from my side about this, I'm the interviewer, but the year 2100, what do you think? What's you think on what temperature we are?
That really depends on human, because for human sure. action, because yeah. We are such a strong driver apparently of global heat
but accumulation. Let's include for sure the physics and the technical goals and inventions that will come maybe, but let's include the functioning of human himself. So we've seen it and see it, and you know what I'm.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Sure. I think first of all, technical inventions on the mitigation or carbon capture side will have no measurable impact on the temperature trajectory by the end of the century. So that's something we can just neglect. So the only strategies that can have impact on temperature are solar radiation management approaches, including MIR framework. And if let's say humans were somehow able to still survive this, if the civilization were still able to survive a temperature rise beyond the 2 degrees, then perhaps would be up to 4 degrees Celsius, 3 or 4. But I highly suspect that based on a review of ecological literature that it's unlikely for human civilization to survive past 2 degrees Celsius rise in global average temperature. So either we have, 4 degrees, if somehow by magic we were able to survive, or civilization collapses by the time average temperature goes above, say, 2.5, at which point we will lose aerosol cooling benefit, which has hidden about another degree or so of a temperature rise. So by that mechanism, we'll again arrive at about 3-4 degrees. So that's a range that's likely, assuming there's no positive feedback loops in the Arctic, in the methane hydrates, and many other forest ecosystem changes, which, you know, and also cryosphere disappearance. So assume that there were no such feedbacks, then we'd be at 3 or 4. But it's very likely that those will kick in as well, and we may be looking at past 4 or 5 degrees Celsius. That's very highly likely. Certainly not 2. There's no way to stay under 2 before 2050. So we will be at 2 degrees Celsius average maybe a few years before that even.
So we have to really focus to the problem is big.
Yes, the problem is the heat. Yes. And we need to focus on it, because that's the only parameter that we have the energy and the material to deal with. Greenhouse gases are not out of question, and it should be discouraged.
Okay, then if you have something else, but I think it was a good point. So yeah. I say thank you for this interview.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation.
Thank you.